Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today, I am fortunate enough to have Deirdre DeVita, who is a West of the Canal top producer. Hi, Deirdre.
How are you? Hi, John. I'm good. Thank you.
Great. It's wonderful having you again, you know, because every time you come on the program, we always get enlightened about what's happening west of the canal, the Shinnecock Canal.
It takes me to travel over the canal to get this information across.
Right, but then it's not decimated. What's the word I'm looking for? It's
disseminated.
Disseminated. Thank you very much to the masses via the airwaves.
Worth the drive for me.
And it's worth you coming in too, because we learned something. So. East of the canal, the third quarter as compared to last year at this time was rather anemic. How was the third quarter for your neck of the woods?
Well, our third quarter was good. A lot of the hamlets in the Westerly Hamptons saw price gains, even though sales volume was down. And that's been a trend in the last few years where we have shrinking inventory in our like bread and butter categories. So we're seeing less sales, but the prices are going up.
Very interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, and overall in the Hamptons, you know, for the third quarter, the median price was up from last year's fourth quarter.
Yeah, but the amount of sales was down, though.
Right. So same story. It's the same story.
Gotcha.
And I know out east you all have an issue with the higher end of the market. We're not really facing that in our market because our higher end is just a different animal.
Right. Oh, okay. So, and that's interesting what you say, because I think part of the problem I find with quarterly reports is the lag time on the information. So, for example, it tells you about recorded sales before, but what is in contract, it doesn't necessarily tell you. So I have recently surveyed what has gone into contract in Sag Harbor in the past 2 months, and I was astounded by the number of homes that are in contract. Has the same happened in your market in the past 2 months?
Yes. In fact, I did a quick survey today of things that are in contract between Remsenburg and East Quogue, and the number that came up were 66 properties, which is a lot.
Right.
And the prices were remarkable. If these all end up going to sale, which is likely because, you know, they're in contract, we'll have three times as many sales in the fourth quarter in our higher ranges, the 5 to 10 million range and the 3 to 5 million range.
Wow.
So that's going to be good news. We've already had a really big sale too, one of the rare, you know, close to 10 million types.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking is I think what we had is a slight correction in the market. And now, from what I see with things going into contract, it's like, okay, people are jumping on board and saying, okay, I want to go out and buy something here in the Hamptons and in your neck of the woods also.
Yeah, I feel like we still benefit, and I know I'm like a broken record on this, but we still benefit from increasing perception of the area. You know, people recognize it's a place they can be in the Hamptons and enjoy everything for less money and less distance from New York City. So we still haven't maxed out that trajectory yet.
Right.
And well, you know what I was thinking today? I heard an interesting conference of international brokers in the city some weeks back. And one of them who operates in Costa Rica was saying that uncertainty in his market puts the brakes on everything. Everyone stops when there's an uncertain element in the market. But as soon as that certainty is resolved, it doesn't matter what the resolution is, they then go ahead and buy. Because then they say, oh, it's X happened, so I'm going to do this, or Y happened, and I'm going to do that. It's the uncertainty itself that holds them back.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting now that we got the elections behind us. I think that is also what you're saying.
You know,
the uncertainty, what's going to happen with the elections. Now we know what's happening.
Right.
And people feel comfortable to move forward.
Right. They know what their plan is based on that.
Right. Exactly. So let me ask you about, speaking of politics here, the new tax law, mm-hmm. especially regarding salt, has that had any impact on your market?
I've noticed an impact in the lower levels of the market where people who are really counting their dollars regarding their monthly expenses, et cetera, have downgraded the top of their search window. I've actually people tell me directly for that it was because of the tax law that they were doing that. I don't think it's going to affect our upper levels of the market although some people are saying it's too early to tell, and it's not till they really feel it, you know, in the beginning of next year, that they might adjust their behaviors. But I'm not seeing it yet. Oh,
that's good. That's very good. The last time you were on, Deirdre, was you gave your assessment of the market heading into the summer. So what are your thoughts of the market where you are now that we're heading into the holidays and the new year?
Well, this is typically the quietest time of year for us. You know, people are not usually thinking of Hampton Homes during the holiday time.
What are they thinking about? Turkeys?
They're thinking turkey. They're thinking carols.
Carols.
But I feel that it will be a good start to the year. I do. It's not going to be, you know, crazy busy, but it's going to be steady and serious.
So can you make I know predictions are iffy. Can you make a prediction as to how you see the West of the Canal market for 2019?
Well, I see it doing the same thing as it's done for the past few years, which is still growing at a small appreciation price-wise and with lower sales volume than in big years like 2014, but steadily establishing higher values.
So you don't think it's like the Manhattan market where right now, you know, prices are coming down, people are, you know, there's a lot of inventory. Do you have that same issue where you are?
Well, we don't have inventory in the categories we sell the most properties in, which are, you know, under 1.5 million. Mm-hmm. So something that's priced right in those categories goes very quickly. We do have a couple years of inventory the higher you get into those price brackets. But they're selling. They are selling.
This is great. This is good news. I like to hear that. Amenities in homes keep changing to attract new buyers. Have you noticed anything that you think might be attractive to a new buyer? Any amenity at all? Or?
Well, people are looking for, I think they're looking for smart homes now, super smart homes, and green homes.
You mean no more with the clap twice and the lights go off?
Yeah, no more calling the alarm company.
Company, right.
Yeah. So that's really the trend I see. And it's interesting to note, too, that rooms are becoming more and more sparse because people have less stuff, less books, music, videos, and, you know, everything is more screen-oriented.
That's a very good observation. Speaking of buyers, do you think it's a good time to buy?
I do think it's a good time to buy, especially if you're buying in the Westerly Hamptons. I believe prices are going to go up slowly for a long time. So if you want something in a certain price category, get it now. And don't be thrown off by the kind of doom and gloom perception that real estate in New York is in a bad way right now. You have to go really local on this data and get the real story about whatever particular area you're looking in.
Well, what you're really saying is that people should be in contact with their broker like yourself that's knowledgeable in the area.
Yeah, because every niche of the market tells a different story, and every niche in every hamlet tells a different story. So it's important to get the real data when you're making such a valuable decision.
So tell us, how can someone get in touch with you?
DeirdreDeVita.com.
I like that. It has a nice ring.
Thank you.
Deirdre, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher, your host for Real Life, and we're broadcasting on 88.3 WPPB, the only NPR station on Long Island. And we'll be right back after the short break with our next guest, the managing director of Liebet Law, Andrew Lieb. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today as my guest, I have the wonderful Andrew Lieb, who is the founder of Liebet Law. Andrew, how are you tonight?
I'm rocking, John. It's a terrific time. The foliage is beautiful. Life is great. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Super fantastic. Let's just say that, because one of the things I want to ask you is the Me Too movement has brought sexual harassment to the forefront recently. Well, not recently, but as recently as 2013, three quarter percent of women said that reporting sexual harassment was a risky career move. Today, only 44% feel that way. So tell us, Andrew, what is sexual harassment in the workplace?
Wow, what a question. What a question. I want to start with something that's even more important than what you're saying on it.
Go ahead.
Because you said about the women. sexual harassment isn't limited to women. And I want people to understand that men can harass men, women can harass women, heterosexuals can harass heterosexuals, heterosexuals can harass homosexuals, transgenders can be harassed, everyone can be a victim of harassment. And I think with the Me Too, it's been a great movement, and they've done great things and made strides for awareness. I'm going to go into what sexual harassment means. But it's so important the listeners understand that this is an issue for everyone. And people don't realize that when you're in the workplace, I don't know if you've ever seen this, where someone will say, I need a strong man to go get the water cooler. That's harassment, if you're thinking about it, because we're creating sexual stereotypes and roles for people, and that makes people feel uncomfortable. That, hey, honey, hey, doll, help me out, rub me on the shoulder. Now, don't misunderstand. Me Too is really more about sexual assault, which goes into a criminal realm as well. But women are harassed exponentially in the workplace. But I want everyone to know that it's about everyone being safe and secure in the workplace, because work is about productivity, not being objectified.
Interesting. That is very interesting. So tell us, sexual harassment just covers all bases, pretty much.
Well, you and I are familiar about it because we have a background in real estate. You're a fabulous real estate broker, for the listeners to know. You got to know John Christopher in the real estate world on the East End. And for years, there's three fields of discrimination law. There's education, there's employment, and there's real estate. So in the real estate world, everyone's known sex discrimination for a long time. What is sexual harassment? It's a subset of sex discrimination. And it's a type of sex discrimination, and there's two kinds we find. One is called quid pro quo. John, if you want me on your show, got to do the naughty with me. That's quid pro quo. Something for something. The other one is when I just start using words like genitalia words, and I start talking about nasty things, and I put up pictures that, you know, when I put up my firefighter calendar on the wall,
mm-hmm.
and it just makes people uncomfortable. That's called a hostile work environment. And those are two types of sexual harassment, and that's the subset of sex discrimination. Sex discrimination also includes things like not giving a reasonable accommodation to a pregnant woman. But when we talk about sexual harassment, we're really talking about quid pro quo and hostile work environment.
Interesting. That is now that. So, hasn't this also created a dilemma? And I know you've said it's women, men, whoever that falls under this aegis. But the thing I want to ask you, but a dilemma I was thinking for men. Since now they're spooked that they might be accused of sexual harassment. They are refusing to go out to lunch with women, refusing to sponsor women, or meeting women behind closed doors. You know,
the word dilemma. I say a solution. It's going in the right direction, not the wrong direction. I'm going to tell you what New York State did, and New York City for that
Please.
Matter. And this is going to solve, I think, a lot of these issues. There's this law called Labor Law 201G. New York City has a similar law, it's a little different, called Local Law 96. But let's just talk about the New York State law. Starting on October 9th of this year, just a little while ago,
right.
Every employee in the state of New York needs to be trained about what sexual harassment is, an annual training for every employee. And let me tell you how that answers your question. I think anxiety comes and fear comes, as you were saying, for the men being on guard that they don't want to go out to lunch alone. I think fear, anxiety comes from the unknown. And if we establish what a baseline of acceptability is and unacceptability is, and people start practicing in the right way, fear gets eliminated. Now, don't misunderstand. There's always going to be people making false complaints. But if you have a protocol with a sexual harassment complaint form, which is required in this law, if you have a protocol with a policy, if you have a protocol with an investigator, that's required in this law. And everyone knows the mechanisms that are going to be going forward. And everyone knows that a false complaint is also very, 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 very dangerous for the purported victim. And there's adverse ramifications that can go into, dare I say, criminal ramifications when people make false complaints. So I don't know if you know my background. I've mentioned to you before, I used to teach human sexuality on the college level, so I'm very familiar with this topic. And what you'd find in studies is the percentage of people that are making false accusations is de minimis. It's almost no one. Don't misunderstand. It's to be feared, but the fear is because people don't know. So here's the solution. go to your company's mandatory training, because every company is now going to have a training. And that's going to get away some of this fear, because we're all going to understand what's expected of us. And I think, just to answer your question, fear comes from the unknown.
Well, that is interesting. Something that you brought up, we were in conversation earlier, is the idea of, especially I found this to be intriguing, is that nannies, people that hire nannies, that this law is down to one employee. Is that correct?
Yeah, we talked about that before we even went on the air, because it's so wild. It's mind-blowing. New York City's law is, if you have 15 or more employees, you have to do the training. Interestingly enough, New York City's human rights law used to say if you have 4 or more employees, it applied. They changed the human rights law for sexual harassment and said even if you have 1 employee, it applies. So in New York City, you're still liable under 15 people, but you don't need to do the training. But what you're getting at is New York State's law says you have 1 employee, you better do this training. You have to. And guess what, John? October 9th, 2018, that already passed, didn't it?
Yep.
You had to have a policy, and that person had to get a written policy. So most people are in violation already, because as of October 9th...
What do you mean when you say writing, explain that a little further.
Great question. So, you know how I could say, hey, John, you work for me at ABC Corporation. We don't allow sexual harassment. That's not a policy. There's minimum requirements that needs to be in the policy according to the Department of Labor. And it has to be a written policy that's distributed to all of your employees. And that was effective on October 9th, 2018. It's already passed. People are already non-compliant. And to answer your question, you have 1 employee. You have a nanny. You have a housekeeper. You have a butler. Whatever you have, you need to have given them their policy already, and they have to be trained before October 9th, 2019. You have 1 year to do that. So it's going to apply to everyone. And when I say a written policy, that's what you need to do. And you mentioned at the beginning, I'm the managing attorney, the founder of Leib at Law, and I am. But I own a company called Leib Compliance LLC. And this onerous burden, all the stuff that I just told you, all solved. We have an online training, an online policy, an online everything. And employers just need to hire us, and we'll give them a branded policy. And I'll tell you the best part. Ready?
Go ahead.
We distribute it during the online class, written digitally, and the employee has to do a digital acceptance of the policy and agree to the terms to continue the class. So they can track and prove to the government, the Department of Labor, if they got audited, hey, guess what? We did this.
Excellent. So how can someone reach you?
So it's very easy. Ready?
Yep.
So we're talking about sexual harassment, right?
Yep.
So go to sexualharassmenttrainingny.com. That's it. Sexualharassmenttrainingny.com. And all you do is there's a home screen that tells you about the laws. You go to our trainings, the choices. There's pricing. There's a video demo that you could see of how our online training works. And then you just go to contact us, and you click contact us, and a representative will contact you probably within 24 hours.
Fantastic.
So sexualharassmenttrainingny.com.
Excellent. Andrew, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher for Real Life, the program about the people, places, and things that are the heartbeat and pulse in the Hamptons and also in the North Fork. We'll be right back after the short break with manual and sports physical therapist Tom Spagnoli. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest manual and sports physical therapy owner, Tom Spagnoli. Hi, Tom. How are you?
How's it going, John?
That's going great, Tom. Before we discuss manual and sports physical therapy, let's talk about you. What led you to want to become a physical therapist?
Well, I guess playing soccer and wrestling in college and high school, you know, I was always athletic, working out, always interested in the body and muscles. And my father owned a couple of physical therapy practices, so that...
Oh, you're kidding. Was he like a mentor?
He was like a mentor, yes.
Huh. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. I went when I was younger to all his practices. He worked a lot, so...
Huh. Was physical therapy at that time for your father, was that like a new field? Was it just starting?
It was just gaining popularity here, yeah. it was a lot different. The insurances were paying a lot more, so it was different.
You know, it kind of leads me into another question that I have. Like, I know in the Norwegian, Scandinavian countries, physical therapy is almost like part of everyday life, where here in the United States, we have physical therapy is like a thing that's just an add-on. It's not necessarily all part of this. And I think every day, you know, just people with physical therapy, whether it's stretching or whatever, avoids a lot of injuries. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I guess physical therapy is more like Western medicine. And in the United States, you see more surgeries, more medication, that kind of thing. But, you know, we're veering towards more physical therapy, you know, now with joint replacements and all these new technologies, people need to get better. So they send them over to us and gait and balance. People,
oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Falls are the number one reason for people over 65 to be entered into the hospital. So it's a big problem. And we see a lot of those patients.
Well, that's fabulous. Now, you were saying about replacements, hip and shoulder replacements. Mm-hmm. I know, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, that a lot of times the surgeon will say, go to PT to build up the area that's going to be replaced, and then have PT after. So how does that work? I mean...
Yeah, that's a great idea. Usually before surgery, if you need surgery, your muscles are weak, you know, you're in pain, so you're not moving it, so you want to get the mobility back first. So going to physical therapy, build up the strength, get your motion back, and people who do physical therapy first tend to do a lot better after the surgery.
Interesting. That is very interesting. So what prompted you to want to become the owner of Manual and Sports Physical Therapy? And how did that happen?
Well, my father prompted me. He said, Tom, go own this thing. No, he, I started working for him. Started at the bottom, worked my way up, and I earned it. Right. So he wanted to retire. He's more into... like adventure racing, and he had other plans, so it was time, and he retired about 2 or 3 years ago, and that's when I bought the practice from him.
Oh, I
see. The three practices.
Oh, interesting, because I always thought it was Shanae at the time. Was she a partial owner?
She was a partner in the Sag Harbor office, yes.
I see. Okay, well, now I know. Tell me, how did physical therapy come about anyway? Does this go back to like WW1 from the war? How did it come about?
Well, they did physical therapy as far back as, the Romans. It was documented, but...
Romans, wow, okay.
Yeah, the Romans, there's a long history of physical therapy.
Was that with the gladiators or no? It had nothing to do with that.
Well... Possibly.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly who, but it was a treatment. You know, they didn't have the surgery and the type of technology we have, so they would diagnose people by the techniques we use.
Right.
Manual kind of techniques.
And they work, obviously,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
right.
They're very beneficial. What are some of the common conditions that you treat?
Well, I'm in an orthopedic office, so we treat... like I was talking about, joint replacements, rotator cuff repair, a lot of back injuries, neck injuries, gait and balance, arthritis.
You mentioned arthritis. I recall seeing an Egyptian exhibit at the Natural History Museum, and there was a mummy in there that supposedly had severe arthritis. So what is arthritis, and why do you think it's such a part of our human history?
Well, I haven't treated many mummies lately, but
you never know. One might walk in.
Yeah, you never know. Might be the first. Well, I don't know how they figured that out, but how we do it is we have a picture, an x-ray of the whole body, and you'll be able to see the joint space in between the two bones. So arthritis is inflammation of the joint. And if you have enough cartilage in between, you don't have arthritis. So as you get, it's an aging kind of disease. There's also rheumatoid arthritis, but it's
deformity
of the joints. Yes. Right. Yeah.
Interesting. I know you also work with neurological disorders such as stroke and Parkinson disease. How so?
Yeah, those are chronic progressive diseases. So, if they're not treated, they're just going to get worse and worse. So Parkinson's, depending on what area of the brain it's affecting, people lose their strength. They start to walk hunched over. So they need to be stretched out. Their balance can be compromised. So we work on that. Stroke patients, within the first year, they can actually gain back a lot of what they've lost. You know, they'll have,
instead of the droopiness or whatever,
right? Yeah,
you work on that. That's
right.
Fascinating.
Half their body, you know, will be pretty much flaccid, and
wow,
we could build that back up. Yeah. That first year is very important.
Now I know you offer a gym membership when the insurance benefits. A lot of insurance, you know, is limited as to how much time. Can you explain what this membership is? This gym membership?
Yeah, in my Sag Harbor office, where we're developing a gym, I have a gym manager. We're offering classes, but like you were saying, the insurance, they cut you off pretty quick. Medicare, I think, gives you 26 visits a year. So we don't want to just kick our patients to the curb. So we have a program. We give them a month free free gym membership after they're discharged from physical therapy.
Wow, that is great. So how can someone reach you and take advantage of manual and sports physical therapy?
They could reach me. They could find us and check us out at the website that my wife made. It's msptthamptons.com.
What is that again?
MSPT, as okay. In Manual Sports Physical Therapy, hamptons.com. We also have a Facebook page, and my office number is 631-725-4450.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.